Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Friday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today, all of them related to the first debate for among Republicans for the 2016 presidential nomination. Jim, it did not disappoint. First of all, we're getting some numbers in the last few minutes here on the ratings, and Fox hit a home run in the ratings for sure. A 16 share last night, way outpacing any other primary debate that's ever been on TV. And so congratulations to them for that. We'll talk about how they did the debate in a little bit. First of all, for the most part, a pretty good night for most of the candidates, and that includes the happy hour debate as well as the primetime debate. Virtually all of the chatter coming out of the happy hour debate centered on Carly Fiorina, who had just had a series of strong answers and not to mention strong interviews following the debate. Here's what she had to say related to the Iran nuclear deal.
I hope Congress says no to this deal, but realistically, even if they do, the money is flowing. China and Russia have never been on our side of the table. The Europeans have moved on. We have to stop the money flow. And by the way, as important as those two phone calls are, they are also very important because they say this: America is back in the leadership business. And when America does not lead, the world is a dangerous and a tragic place. This is a bad deal. Obama broke every rule of negotiation. Yes, our allies are not perfect, but Iran is at the heart of most of the evil that is going on in the Middle East through their proxies.
Before that, she had mentioned on her first day as president, she would make two phone calls, one to Netanyahu to say the United States stands with Israel, and the other one to the Supreme Leader of Iran, saying things are going to change real fast when it comes to inspecting your nuclear facility. So, Jim, virtually all the chatter on Carly Fiorina positive from the right, and there's a pretty good chance she'll be in the big debate come September.
I think it's, you know, really tough to say that she wasn't the breakout star of certainly the first one, and I think certainly you look at the two of them together, she probably was the candidate who most altered the opinions or enhanced her image amongst Republican primary voters. And I think here's the thing. I thought she did very well last night. And sometimes the post-debate analysis, and some would say spin, can kind of take on a life of its own. Well, it definitely took on a great deal of momentum after that, the undercard debate. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact she got into, you know, she did an interview with MSNBC. Chris Matthews interviewed her, and she basically left him speechless. Everything you've ever wanted to see of a Republican figure rejecting every false premise baked into a skewed question. She just, you know, slammed back at him and didn't concede a point and wasn't angry, wasn't sneering, was just firm and direct and straightforward. And so I think she's definitely earning it. You mentioned earlier, Greg, the terrific, really phenomenal ratings for this. And if you feel like everybody in the primetime debate did a good job, and I really think they did. I don't think there's anybody who I would say was bad. I think you might argue Jeb Bush seemed a little unenergetic, shall we say. I think of the 10 guys up on stage, I kind of thought Mike Huckabee seemed like a guy who was looked a little tired, a little past his prime. But there are a lot of people who looked at it very differently and said they thought he did really well. He's always a folksy, warm, grandfatherly figure on that stage. Look, if you think that was a good night for Republicans and that they made the case for conservative policies well, then 16% of the American televisions on being at that hour tuned into the debate is a very good thing for Republicans. Listeners will know, readers of my posts in the corner and Morning Jolt will know, I'm not a fan of Donald Trump in a lot of different ways. But in this sense, he is serving the party, and that the curiosity about, wait a minute, this you know, reality TV guy, what's he doing up on that stage? He brought people in. And maybe he'll help himself, or there's an excellent chance he'll help lots of the other candidates on there. Because maybe you didn't tune in a Marco Rubio fan or a Scott Walker fan, but you look at that and say, boy, those guys were really good.
Yeah, speaking of Rubio, a lot of people like what he had to say. He was not one of the ones I thought stood out the most, but when you go back and listen to some of the things, he was very much on message, had a great targeting of Hillary Clinton when it comes to making the case for being the champion of the middle class. His biggest potential hindrance is immigration. I think he hurt himself a little bit by seeming to be not a big fan of the fence by saying El Chapo could dig under it. But when talking about why people are perhaps attracted to Trump, why people are frustrated about immigration, he had this to say, and I think it resonated pretty well.
People are frustrated. This is the most generous country in the world when it comes to immigration. There are 1 million people a year who legally immigrate to the United States, and people feel like we're being taken advantage of. We feel like despite our generosity, we are being taken advantage of. And let me tell you who never gets talked about in these debates. The people that call my office, who have been waiting for 15 years to come to the United States, and they paid their fees, and they hired a lawyer, and they can't get in, and they're wondering maybe they should come illegally.
And so that was very well received. And I think the issue itself got a lot more attention, potentially, again, because of Trump. And a lot of people were ready to talk about it and look like they're ready to do something about it if they actually get elected next year.
I concur. The only thing I would note is that at one point, it characteristic to his typically modest view of himself, Trump said, you know, Chris, you wouldn't even be talking about this issue if it wasn't for me. And I'd really like to say factcheck.org to take a look at that, because I'm fairly certain they might talk about it differently. They're the focus of the discussion. I think you can safely say that Trump's comments aligned very well with the controversy of sanctuary cities and going on the attack about that certainly helped focus on that one. But I don't think you could say Donald Trump single-handedly brought the issue of immigration, and particularly illegal immigration, to the discussion. I thought it was kind of interesting. I thought, you know, Rubio, even if he didn't like the Chapo line, Rubio's not anti-wall, but he points out that it's not just a matter of building a fence or building a wall.
Right.
And noting that the wave of immigration is no longer Mexicans.
Right.
It may be that, you know, Mexico's emptying out because they're all here already. But that actually, particularly you look at the children swarming over the border last summer, that was primarily coming from Nicaragua and other countries in Central America. So it looked like he had done his homework on that. If you were wary about the Gang of Eight, I don't know if you necessarily walked out saying, oh, okay, Rubio's one of us on this one. But I think just in terms of just poise and being able to kind of just kind of connect through the television screen, I think Rubio does a good job with that.
And I think Ted Cruz probably helped himself by talking about how he tried to push the Sanctuary Cities Amendment to the Senate Transportation Bill, while also taking a couple of shots at his own leadership, which he was asked about. So he had no choice but to address that. So I think overall he did pretty well in that on the radical Islam question and some others as well. Ben Carson, I think a lot of people thought he started a little tentatively, but he kind of found his footing later in the debate. His laughing about the things that he's done and nobody else has in his closing remarks were very well received. And also on a more serious topic, he was asked about race and had this response.
I was asked by an NPR reporter once, why don't I talk about race that often? I said, it's because I'm a neurosurgeon. And she thought that was a strange response. I said, when I take someone to the operating room, I'm actually operating on the thing that makes them who they are. The skin doesn't make them who they are. The hair doesn't make them who they are. And it's time for us to move beyond that.
That was strong, Jim, I thought.
Oh, I, you know, you hear the applause in the background, but I was applauding from home. You know, here's the thing. I've written some stuff that's been critical of Ben Carson. I think there's a lot of people who wonder if he really is ready to step into the role of commander-in-chief and handle everything the presidency entails. But even if you think that about him, he's still a phenomenal individual. You hear something like that, and you just want to, like, spend time with him. And here's the thing. Like, for somebody who's been, you know, doing okay in polls, you know, in that consistently in that top 10 but not front runner, you got to wonder, for you know, how many people were tuning in last night who really haven't heard Ben Carson speak that much, who aren't that familiar with him, or maybe heard about some of his comments in the earlier in the cycle that didn't come out quite right about, you know, homosexuality in prisons and things like that. You hear something like that and say, well, okay, this is a guy who really has his heart in the right place, indisputably brilliant. And even if you don't think he's right for the presidency, this is a guy who has great capacity to be a national leader, if not in politics, then in some realm, and a guy who's, you know, very much worth listening to.
Last point on the good martini is the debate between Chris Christie and Rand Paul, pretty substantive, obviously very different positions on data gathering, bulk data collection, that sort of thing. I thought they both articulated their positions fairly well on that. A couple of zingers in there about hot air on a subcommittee and from Christie towards Paul, and Paul responding about Christie's hug with President Obama. Not exactly sure where the folks came down in terms of the poll numbers on who might have won that exchange.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was thinking about that because there were some people who didn't like it, who felt it was a little too hot, a little too blustery. I mean, these guys were definitely shouting at each other.
Sure.
On that debate stage. But, you know, I thought about it. Like, I don't think there was anything contrived about it. I think they both genuinely feel really passionately about that. I think that Rand Paul genuinely believes that a part of the Constitution has been trampled, that the Fourth Amendment has been utterly ignored by the administration and the NSA and the way the Patriot Act is being implemented. And this is something that, you know, it's one of the reasons he got into politics. This is something that gets the blood pumping in him. And I don't think he necessarily hurt himself that much. The flip side, you know, Chris Christie, I think there are some people who might say the constant invocation of the 9/11 victims seemed a little emotionally manipulative. But I also think he, too, very much believes, no, we need to do this kind of stuff. err on the side of caution. I'm going to err on the side of, look, if I'm right, then we need to do this and we keep people alive. If Rand Paul is right, then we're infringing on their constitutional rights. But we can always fix that later. If I'm, you know, if Chris Christie is right and we don't monitor terrorists, people die. And that's probably the, you know, as bad as it is to violate somebody's constitutional rights, mass death is a worse consequence. And this is, you know, this is a serious issue. And I think you can see Republicans don't lean all one way or the other on this issue. So I'm really glad that it came up. Just kind of interesting contrast. You know, Greg, can you imagine – we'll see how the Democratic debates shake out. Do you think you're going to see Hillary and Sanders or O'Malley and Jim Webb or even if Biden – do you think you're going to see anybody argue with that kind of passion and vehemence – over anything?
Probably not.
In the Democratic debate.
It's all going to be a lurch to the left as far as
right? I mean, I guess I can't see a kind of a principled non, you know, which is our priority most, right? You know, our constitutional rights or security versus liberty, security versus privacy. Look, that's not a simple, you know, matter to shake out there. And I think that, you know, Paul and Christie both did their sides really well. I think the reason I don't think this will be a huge deal is I think if you feel very strongly about this, you're already in the camps of these guys. I don't think necessarily won anybody over from one side or the other in this one.
All right, on to the bad martini. And this one will be fairly brief because it pretty much all comes from the earlier debate. And Jim, it's just we're still wondering on a few people, why are you really doing this? The two 9/11 governors, George Pataki and Jim Gilmore, certainly. I think most people probably thought Pataki acquitted himself a little bit better. And as you pointed out in our pre-podcast notes today, what is the deal with Lindsey Graham? He just seems depressed.
Greg, should we stage an intervention? I don't always agree with Lindsey Graham, but he really needs a hug. Particularly at one point, like, and it was almost self-parody, Greg, where he said, you know, I'm nearly 60 years old. I'm not married. I have no kids. I'm lonely. I added that part, but he really did get into that kind of stuff. And I wanted somebody to just go over, Jindal, get over there, hug the man, you know, let him know he's not alone. All right. You know, there are people who care about you, Senator Graham, you know. And then finally, at one point, every candidate wants to radiate that sunny Ronald Reagan optimism. At one point, he said, I still believe America's best days are ahead of it. Boy, you sure as heck don't sound like it, Senator. Are you feeling, you know, like every, and it wasn't just us, Greg. I mean, people kept saying, did his dog die right before he went on stage? You know, and there's something, if we hear something that he had gotten some sort of like really bad family news before he went on, that would explain a little bit. Otherwise, there were three guys who I kind of feel like people were wondering why, you know, they were running beforehand. Graham and Gilmore and Pataki. And I don't think last night really did anything to shake that. And I wouldn't mind a slightly thinner field in the not too distant future. Like, oh, Jim, you're trying to exclude voices. I don't see what these guys have to add. If Lindsey Graham is, as I suspect, running to be Secretary of Defense, look, okay, everybody promised to make him Secretary of Defense, and you know, we'll move on from that because, particularly in light of how well Fiorina did last night, and I also think, you know, Jindal and Perry were pretty good. We'd get momentum. Oh, this is getting good. Oh, now we're back to Gilmore again to tell us about a commission he was on back in the 1990s. Yeah, potty break.
All right, on to the crazy martini now. And this will kind of be a double-shotted third martini. We haven't talked about Trump much yet, so let's talk about Trump. And he got some tough questions early on. In fact, the first one right out of the box was, raise your hand if you won't commit to supporting the eventual Republican nominee, and you'll promise not to run a third-party campaign. And Jim, it was pretty obvious that Trump was the only one that question was aimed at, so raising the hands might have been a little bit theatrical on the part of Fox, so they could have just asked him the first question. The Megyn Kelly question about how he's referred to women in tweets and statements, his Rosie O'Donnell line played pretty well, but she talked about how it went much deeper than that. Trump went on the political correctness side with that and saying he doesn't have time to be politically correct, we got a lot of problems. And then this morning on Morning Joe, MSNBC, he decided a little bit here to play the victim card. They asked him flat out, do you think you were treated fairly by Fox during the debate? And here's what he said.
I don't think so. Actually, some of the other people came up to me that were on the stand, and they said, man, I'm glad I didn't get those questions you were getting. And they didn't. I mean, they didn't. But, you know, I've been set up before, and I think I handled it well.
And then when it's specifically related to the women question, he said this.
You know, the question on the women, I didn't say many of those things. They said something, and they were giving out some words, and I don't remember that on The Apprentice, and I don't remember, I don't know where they got some of these words, to be honest with you. In fact, I'm going to have somebody call up and find out where these words came from, because I don't recognize those words.
Jim, on Twitter, Trump has not cleaned up his language in response to that question. He says, Frank Luntz is a low-class slob who came to my office looking for consulting work, and I had zero interest. Now he picks anti-Trump panels. A lot of people had negative things to say in his timeline about Megyn Kelly. He says she is totally overrated and angry. She really bombed tonight. And then his first one is, I really enjoyed the debate tonight, even though the Fox News trio, especially Megyn Kelly, was not very good or professional. He also faced tough questions about when did you exactly become a Republican, and tell us a little bit more about your company's bankruptcy. So tough questions, but he's the front runner, so he should be used to that. To kind of snipe about it afterwards doesn't look that great.
Yeah, I mean, remember, this is the guy who's going to look Russia in the eye. He's going to look China in the eye. He's going to bring ISIS to the negotiating table. He's going to tell OPEC your fun is over. But Megyn Kelly was mean to me, Greg. One, as you said, when you're the front runner, you have to be ready for this. Two, like, look, do you think, you know, if Trump were the nominee, Hillary Clinton wouldn't mention all these things that he said about women over the years? Really? You don't think that? Now, you're right. He did a very nice job of initially diffusing it by saying, you know, only Rosie O'Donnell, knowing that a Republican audience was, you know, not particularly fond of fire has never melted steel before O'Donnell. And so, you know, that was a good way to diffuse it. But then, you know, Kelly pointed out other things he had said about other women. And he really bristled during that. You could tell that little bit of flash of anger at Megyn Kelly. The one that jumped out of me, and I pointed this out in the corner, and it's one of those moments. We're seeing it happen, but I'm still not entirely sure that I'm not still sleeping from last night and that I'm not dreaming all of this. Because last night on Twitter, Trump is deciding to retweet all the people who say that he's right, including somebody named Tim J. Cam, who says, Fox viewers give low marks to bimbo Megyn Kelly, will consider other programs. I'm sure at some point Megyn Kelly and I would disagree on something. I am sure it's not fun to be on the receiving end when she really thinks she's got you and she's going to, you know, hit you with some hard questions. But bimbo, really, Donald? This is probably what's going to hurt him most, in that the Fox News audience loves Megyn Kelly for good reason. You know, is she an attractive woman? Sure. But also, she's really good at her job. She is a really tough interviewer. If he was really surprised by those kinds of questions, he was not prepared. His statement, by the way, that he doesn't recall making any of these comments. Greg, I have amnesia. I have huge amnesia. I have classy. I black out periodically, and I don't remember what I did, you know. You've got to be able to handle stuff like that. And the idea that he, you know, then, you know, was on Morning Joe, and he's whining about the questions were so hard, you know, was that a hard question to him? Sure. There was also a question to Bush about his family. There's also a question to Rubio about abortion in cases of rape and incest. There was also a question to John Kasich about justifying Medicaid expansion. You know, the moderators brought it. Okay, they went to every single one of them and said, "Hey, what is your, you know, basically what is their weakness? Right? What is the area they are least comfortable talking about it?" And they gave him that fastball high and inside just to see what their, you know, how the reaction was going to be. And I think you could say Trump was the only one who really got flustered by that. And the second thing, that opening question, like we had huge news going out of this. Because think about what that show of hands means. We talked in that previous segment about Rand Paul and Chris Christie, right?
Yes.
If Rand Paul's the nominee, Chris Christie is going to support him because he's better than Hillary Clinton, even though they disagree so strongly on that issue, and vice versa, right? Rubio and Rand Paul on foreign intervention, right? I mean, you can go throughout this field, and you can see lots of really strong disagreements. But ultimately, they're all Republicans. They're going to back the Republican nominee, except for one guy. And, you know, I don't really understand how you can be the Republican front runner and the Republican standard bearer if you're not willing to say, I'm a Republican, I'm proud of it, and I'm going to support my party's nominee no matter how this shakes out.
To me, his weakest response was on the question of the Iranian general in Russia. It mm-hmm. just seemed to me like Trump wasn't really even sure what Bear was talking about there.
Yeah, okay, well, there's that. There's, you know, the question of the bankruptcies. Look, it's not a crime to go into bankruptcy. Anybody can encounter hard times or things like that. But it does kind of puncture this idea that he's a unparalleled business genius and everything he touches turns to gold and things like that. And then finally, Greg, would you pay Hillary Clinton to come to your wedding?
No.
I turned to Mrs. Campaign Spot. I'm like, did we pay anybody to come? I thought they were there because they're our friends and all that stuff. Because you know, he got hit with the tough but fair question. Hey, you've given a lot of money to Democratic candidates over the years. Why, Mr. Republican frontrunner? And he's basically like, look, you know, you have the money, they do what you want to do. Which, like, it's kind of a strangely gleeful statement about, look, they're corrupt and I bought them. That's there's the subtext there. So then I was like, ooh, okay, this is really good. You're making news here. So, Donald, what did you get from Hillary? And the only thing is, well, she came to my wedding. Really? Was that like on your bucket list or something? Is that something you're really craving? You know, the suspicion is that there's something more there, which makes sure. Hillary look bad. But then here's the next thing. Like, could you imagine a world, Greg, in which the Republican frontrunner paid the Democratic frontrunner to come to his wedding? Are we dreaming? Is this really happening?
Very entertaining in a lot of different ways. We learned a lot about how the candidates responded to different things. And if you heard a little bit of ambient noise in our podcast today, it's because Jim's watch party is still going on.
It is. Well, I don't know about you. I feel like that last half really stretched on. So I was really hoping they'd get the debate done in time for the actual Iowa caucuses and stuff. So thankfully it's done. So I hope everyone enjoyed it. Certainly it was not a boring debate. We can give Fox News lots of credit for that.
That's the first one down, and there's several more to go. The next one, I think, is September 16th. CNN's got that one at the Reagan Library. So, Jim, in the meantime, have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you Monday.
See you Monday, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. Have a great weekend, and join us again Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.